Well, hello there. I'm Adam, you know, from podcasts. We've got a new show premiering on the subscription site today, and we're posting the first episode in full for free so all of you non-subscriber types can check it out. It's a new book club podcast featuring me and Danger Van Gorder. We call it Get Lit. If you like it and you want to hear all of the future episodes, along with lots of back episodes of great shows you've never heard before, sign up for our subscription service at connectpal.com/unpopularopinion. Thanks. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Get Lit, a podcast about books you should read. With your hosts, Adam Todd Brown and Danger Van Gorder.
All right.
Hey, everybody.
Oh, hey, guys.
We're recording.
Yeah, hey.
Right. How neat.
Yeah, no, I love this whole enterprise.
Welcome to the podcast we don't know the name of yet.
I thought of a really good one, and I want to pitch that first.
Okay, yeah, let's do that right off.
I think you're going to like it.
I'm waiting.
Well, this is a book club podcast, right?
Yes.
It involves literature.
We're going to be suggesting, we're going to be suggesting books to each other. And then for the 2 months after that, we'll do one episode about each of those books.
And we'll get into why and the benefits of reading. But I want to pitch Get Lit, like literature.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, that is pretty solid.
I actually like that.
Okay, maybe we shouldn't do the poll. Maybe we don't care about what the audience thinks.
No one's going to come up with anything better than Get Lit.
Sweet. Okay, good. I want everybody to know I thought of that literally 2 minutes before we went on the air with this, so...
That's pretty fantastic.
Sweet. All right.
Welcome to Get Lit.
Yeah. What's up, guys?
Me in Danger. Me being Adam Todd Brown.
Right. Always introduce yourself.
You'll recognize me from all of the podcasts you listen to on this here mini podcast network, I guess.
And you'll be writing again at some point.
Yeah. I think I'm just going to start writing on our site. We're going to start doing a lot more with our site. Don't you worry, people.
Well, if you're You can cut this later if you want, but you remember me pitching you a while back about a column that I wanted to pitch Cracked called Epic eBay?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you think that would fit on your new flagship? All right, cool.
I'd be all for that. Yeah.
I've sold a lot of guitars by writing insane stories about the guitars. And then this last one, however, sadly, like, I sold a really, it was a Gibson 335 custom, is beautiful satin finish. One of the finer American made guitars. You know, it's like it's the Coca-Cola of guitars,
right?
And I wrote this whole big story about of a Viking warrior, a warrior musician, asking the great skies to be given the weapon with which she would then conquer everything. And the person who bought it had no English comprehension at all. So he just saw the picture and was like, I want this. And I was so sad because I was like, I'm happy to make the sale. But I realized that my story did not sell that shit. I just took care of it and that's it. It was a bittersweet moment. I was bummed out. I would get emails from people like, oh, I mean, I'm not interested in the guitar, but damn, that was a funny story. Like, thanks. Yeah, you know. Yeah. Always try to surprise people. You never know how you're going to reach somebody that day.
That's so true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to start doing a lot more written stuff on the site also. I'm going to start writing columns tied to the weekly podcast again. I might even... That might already be happening by the time you hear this.
Unpopular Opinion is such a strong flag. Like, I would fly that banner over anything.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Like, it just works.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
It's so much more gentle than Rage Against the Machine. You know what? Maybe I don't want to rage against it. Maybe I want to sit back and have a froyo against the machine.
Yeah, yeah. You maybe know? I want to sip a fine scotch.
Ooh.
And just
are you a scotch man?
Have just kind of discuss the machine.
Okay, yeah.
I don't mind a good scotch.
Because I just got back from Scotland and I have I have some really
more like Scotchland.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's drink scotch sometime. Are you going anywhere for Christmas?
No, I mean, I'll be here. My family's here.
So. Me and Chet Wild will also be here all through Christmas and the holidays.
Dude, let's...
let's rage!
Let's get...
Let's
sip some scotch against the machine.
We do. Have you ever watched the Larry Sanders Show?
I've not.
This will come up. This will come up on podcast next week. But Chet is irate that I've never seen the Larry Sanders Show.
Okay, and he's wrong about a lot of things.
Yeah, but I've heard good things about Larry Sanders.
Okay. No, so, no. I'm not saying he's wrong about Larry. I'm saying he's wrong about raging at you or gently sipping scotch against you for having not seen the Larry Sanders Show.
No, I mean, I understand. I get it. Yeah. So we might at some point get together and watch the Larry Sanders Show.
Okay. If you want to... Dude, clue me in. I'm there.
Come do
I'm
that.
I'm there like shareware.
We'll have holiday shenanigans.
Such as they are.
So... This podcast, Get Lit.
Get God, lit. I love that. So happy with that.
Yeah, that name is fantastic. We're going to be, me and Danger, each episode. Well, not each episode. We're still kind of hammering out how this is going to work. But at least in this episode, we're each going to introduce a book that we think the other should read and that the audience should read. And over the next two episodes, we'll discuss each of those books. We'll dedicate one episode to each book. And then we'll just start that whole cycle over.
Right. Because you know what? Reading is, I mean, it's both easier and harder to read these days.
Right.
You know, like you get your Kindles, you got your, like I have my all-time favorite book is the one book I have in my Kindle app on my phone. So if I'm ever like waiting for a plane or something like that, I can just pop up my book and just fly through it. Super right. easy. But we've also kind of trained ourselves as a society to, like, just do everything in quick, fast spurts. We get the listicle, right. the listicle mentality, and getting back to a deep dive in these kind of books is something that I've really wanted to do because, you know, I want to be a better scholar in a lot of
absolutely.
Ways, you know? And maintain a longer attention span because... God damn it, this whole goddamn country needs a longer attention span.
Very much so.
And we like to think in our own teeny tiny pathetic way that we can contribute to that with the podcast.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do.
Yep, it's going to be good. And I'm sure we'll have many adventures.
We're going to have so many adventures.
So many adventures. Do you have any particular like guidelines that you wanted to stick with for... What kinds of books? You want literature?
Or no, like? Because I don't know about you, but I read a kind of a varied assortment of types of books. I'm big on...
Give me the... Because I just went, and in the spirit of this podcast, I picked up a bunch of new books that I was going to crack into. There's something of a theme with my recent five books that I'm going to be getting into. But what have you picked up recently?
This was very ill-advised, but I bought... a book called The Secret History of the Mossad, which I planned to read. That's Israel's Secret Service Agency, which I planned to read while I was on the Portugal the Man tour. And that is not a book that lends itself to short spurts of attention, like you mentioned. Like that's something you have to sit down with. But now that I'm back, I'll probably have that on one of the future episodes because it's, if you like espionage and true tales of government chicanery, reading about the Mossad is for you. I mean, they are the people responsible for the movie Munich. And
we can all agree that that was amazing, with the minor caveat that they didn't feel bad for blowing those people up. Sorry, the Mossad did not feel bad for taking out the subjects of the film. You know, there was no moral gray area.
Yeah, And that was the one part the Mossad rejected when that movie came out. They were like, no, we didn't feel bad about it. We just did it.
But well, American audiences lied. Can feel bad because, I mean, there's more than one ethnicity and culture in America. So we can sort of think twice. And we should think twice about, you know, the ramifications of selective killing.
Right.
You know? But,
yeah.
Long enough. Think about it. Mull it over for long enough.
Right.
It's important.
That's actually almost all of the books I have in my rotation now are kind of historical accounts of really big things. There's The History of the Mossad. There's another one I'm reading called The Coming of the Third Reich, which is about obviously...
It's a porn, right?
Yeah. It's obviously a brony book about friendship is magic. No, it's about, obviously, the rise of the Third Reich in Nazi Germany. So, yeah, I'm reading a lot of historical accounts of major events. The Coming of the Third Reich, Another one that I have picked up and haven't started yet, but I'm really excited about, is called The Big Payback, The History and Business of Hip Hop.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. I just cracked into the Netflix just put out a documentary series called Hip Hop Evolution.
I can't wait to watch that.
It's really cool. It's really, really cool. Like, Grandmaster Flash is so charming.
He really is.
He's really, really charming.
And I don't know if they interview Curtis Blow, but when they do, please note that he looks and talks exactly like Kanye West. He looks like Kanye West's father. It's pretty great.
Okay.
Just like his mannerisms and the way he talks.
Okay.
Just keep an eye out.
It's really good. I did I remember doing it when I was in college. I did a presentation on the evolution of hip hop.
Nice.
Happily hitting a lot of the same notes. I did start mine with Blondie did not start this. No, wrong.
No, absolutely not.
But you know what? Props. I mean, I can say props in this context. That she did help bring it to the mainstream.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, cheers. Great stuff. But yeah, highly recommended, listeners. But you know what? Books first.
Books first. So those three books are what's kind of on my plate next. And, of course, the book that you'll be suggesting today.
Right.
But what else have you picked up recently?
I went to the British Museum when I was in London, and I loved it. It was you know, looking at all the shit that people have stolen for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Right.
You know, because they had the guns and the ships. There was a book that I saw them advertising there that was put together by the curator of the British Museum called A History of the World in 100 Objects.
Oh, wow.
I purchased that. I got through a single object, and then I got sleepy on the plane, and I went to bed. It's sitting on my nightstand right now amongst so much other shit right now that I'm just on a tear through. I just finished The Tipping Point, which somehow had eluded me.
Great book.
For a really long
time. I love all of Malcolm Gladwell's books.
Yeah, he's rad. He's really cool.
Have you read The Outliers?
No, I have not.
Outliers
is
great.
I will happily add that to the list. Right now I'm reading Saving Capitalism by Robert Reich.
Nice.
Who, if people are not familiar, he was a big Bernie Sanders booster. He was President Clinton, 42, his labor secretary. And he is a intellectual. He's a really smart guy. And he's able to get his points across. He's teeny tiny, too. It's weird. He's like 5 foot even.
Oh, great.
But like I've seen him speak. He's really, really well spoken, and he knows how to take complex issues and kind of make them digestible for big dummies like me.
I like that.
Yeah, and it's the theme of that book is capitalism for the many rather than the few.
Sure.
Because, you know, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, capitalism, we had a really strong middle class. People starting businesses, people able to feed their families and have a home and a car on one person's income.
Right.
Not so much
that
anymore.
That definitely went away.
Definitely went away.
70s, 80s. Thanks, Reagan.
Yeah.
He was really instrumental in undoing all of that, especially with the air traffic controller strikes, shit like that.
I don't know if this will help or hurt my political campaigning when I'm eventually running for whatever the hell I'm going to run for. You heard it here first, folks.
President.
President of the High Five Association. I don't know. But Reagan really undid a lot of the good that this country had built up.
Yep.
All the post-war, hell yeah, just tore itself to pieces in the Reagan era. Well, we can get into that, I'm sure, as part of Get Lit.
Get Lit. Okay. Oh, what a great title.
And then after that, in addition to, obviously, the book I'll be reading for your purposes, I'm reading Bernie Sanders' Our Revolution.
Nice.
His book that he just put out. Because I was reading Outsider in the White House, which chronicles his rise to being a congressman, being a senator, as an independent, and then a lot of that material has been revisited in the new Our Revolution with a bit more of a forward-looking mentality, which, you know what, I'm happy to say that this country might respond well to.
Let's hope.
Yeah, let's
hope. So it's interesting that given the rundown of books we just went through, we are both this month going with novels.
Yep, which I imagine most of this show will be novels because...
Yeah, but some of those historical books are worth.
Yeah. I mean, we don't. Again, we're still figuring out the format of this whole enterprise, but we're not going to throw a bunch of nonfiction at you all at the same time, we're never going to want you to feel like bogged down in facts. We'll try to keep it as broad as possible, so that you know. It's meant to spur the attention span, but also titillate, maybe, a little.
We do love to titillate.
Mm-hmm. I just like the word titillate.
It's a really great word. It sounds so dirty.
It's a very percussive kind of titillate.
It sounds like something you shouldn't be doing.
Mm-hmm, but you're gonna.
And it's got the word tit in it. Oh. So should we get into our books for this month?
Yes. Okay. So
let's start with glaring disparity between our two books.
Well, let's start with yours, please.
Mine appears to be, at least compared to yours, about 25 pages long.
It is 314.
Okay.
And with smaller pages as well. So lay it on me. What are we doing? What are we reading?
Well, this book, I'm a big, when it comes to novels, I'm a big sci-fi fan. And this book is called This Perfect Day. It was written in 1970 by Ira Levin, who you might recognize as the man behind Rosemary's Baby and Boys from Brazil. It's actually one of two books he's written that has not been made into a movie. Everything else he's written...
Wow.
Well, Boys, have you ever read Boys from Brazil?
I have not.
We will get that on this podcast at some point, too. It's a fictional tale, kind of based in fact, though, about the Nazis fleeing to Brazil after World War II.
Right.
And a guy who is basically a Nazi hunter. And it is intense. It's a great book. They botched the movie terribly. It is definitely not just go see the movie. Don't even fucking see the movie.
That's going to be something of a theme here because I can already tell that there are so many books that are better books. There's occasionally a movie that's a better movie. It does not happen that often.
Yeah. Almost everything Ira Levin has written, the book is significantly better. Like Rosemary's Baby as a movie doesn't really hold up.
You can do so much more with a book. You can have inner monologue in ways that like a movie... Film is an art of reduction,
right?
And novelization. I mean, if certain one of the ways you can do it is a way of like expansion. Like you can get more, you can give people thoughts, and you can paint things in certain ways that recall images. And I'm not talking smack on filmmaking because I am a filmmaker as well as many of the other things that I do. But I mean, a lot of the art to that is trimming things away to leave a simpler statement. But in a book, you can really dive in and, there's characters in the Harry Potter universe that got cut from the movie series.
Right.
As a whole, because they just didn't have time. Filch.
I've never read the Harry Potter books.
They're solid.
Please don't make me either.
I won't because I just, and I'm not going to ruin Harry Potter for
it's
everybody.
A shitty pick for a book club too, because so many people
have
read.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. And you should have read it by now if you were going to read it.
I
still recommend reading it, but I mean, we'll get to my pick in a moment. I think it's better than the Harry Potter books for a lot of reasons. But there's one thing that J.K. Rowling does in her writing that as a writer, and again, I'm a writer. I may wear so many hats.
Not to brag.
Yeah, but as a writer, she has this one tick that's so annoying to me that as soon as I noticed it, it was like, oh, it pulled me out of the book so hard.
What is it?
I don't want to say because I don't want to ruin
Let's
it
ruin
people.
Harry Potter for everybody, Danger.
I don't want to do that.
Okay, fine.
I'll tell you in private.
Yeah, tell me in private.
Yeah, okay.
And then I'll leak it on Napster. People can download it. So This Perfect Day.
Is Napster even still a thing?
Nah, probably not. Yeah. I mean, it might still exist in some form, but who cares? So This Perfect Day, it was, like I said, one of the only two books of his that haven't been made into a movie. And it is a dystopian, it's set in a dystopian future. I believe 141 years after something called the Unification.
Oh.
Which is when a huge central computer called Unicomp took over control of the world.
Oh, boy.
And
is it like, what is it? I Have No Mouth and Must Scream?
Yeah, it's a book. It's very similar to 1984 uh-huh. or A Brave New World, but I would argue better than those two books. Definitely a more satisfying ending, which I will not give away. The ending to 1984, in my opinion, is one of the most disappointing endings, or at least most overrated in terms of literature. It was just, it felt like, I mean, he gave up, but it felt like he also gave up on the end of that book. And it's just like, oh yeah, okay, the guy finally, he loves Big Brother.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Well, yeah. If you haven't read Big Brother, it's fucking 48 pages long. Jesus Christ.
For a book that was written in 1948.
Yeah. And all throughout this book, there's this creepy-ass poem. This poem opens the book, and then it gets referenced all throughout the book. And it is Christ, Marx, Wood, and Way led us to this perfect day. Marx, Wood, Why, and Christ, all but Why were sacrificed. Wood, Why, Christ, and Marx gave us lovely schools and parks. Why, Christ, Marx, and Wood made us humble, made us good.
Okay. Well, I know two of those names.
Yeah, that's the thing. Christ and Marx, we obviously recognize. It's kind of weird that they portray Marx as a martyr, which that's strange.
It's a dystopia, apparently.
Yeah. And I think Wood is meant to represent the United States because they reference a guy named, I think it's David Wood, throughout the book as being one of the four kind of driving forces behind the creation of Unicomp. But they never really explain who he is. And Li Wei is the guy who actually built Unicomp or designed it. So he is the, everyone was sacrificed except but Wei. Wei is the one who finally led to the creation of Unicomp. And I don't want to give too much away about that guy. Uh-huh. But he is a central character in the story. And the way the world works in this...
The way the world works? We're going to be stuck doing that for a while.
We are. Mm-hmm. The whole time. The world is managed, like I said, by this central computer called Unicomp. And to keep people kind of happy and complacent, they get monthly treatments, which involve everything from drugs to reduce your sex drive to drugs that just make you happy and complacent so you don't think too much about the fact that a central computer is controlling your entire life. There are only four names for men or women, which, where'd they go? For men, it's Bob, Jesus, Carl, or Lee. And for women, it's Anna, Mary, Peace, or Yin. Those are the only four names you can have, and then they're differentiated by a number. And they refer to these as numbers. I just always assume this book takes place in England. So every time I uni, like it, whenever they call out uni,
right,
I just
now I'm
picture
gonna hear that
a really
when I'm
whiny
it.
British voice. Uni, what's my number then? But these numbers are on bracelets that they use. There's scanners everywhere, and if there's a door, there will be a scanner in front of it. And if you put your bracelet up to it and it says you can't go in, it's just another place you can't go. So every movement, every action in life is dictated by this computer. It decides who you're going to marry, what your job's going to be, if you're going to have kids, everything. Also, everyone dies at the age of 62. Some people...
For efficiency?
Yeah, for efficiency. To make it look good, some people die at 61 and some people die at like 63 to make it seem like, oh, that's just when human life peters out. Is around that time. But no, they're literally killing people at the age of 62, which shouldn't surprise anyone.
This book sounds like a real bummer.
It's a real bummer at first. It centers, the main plot centers around a kid named, I have to read his number here, Lee RM35M4419, who conveniently has been nicknamed Chip by his very rebellious grandfather.
I take it they don't smile upon, Unicomp doesn't smile upon nicknames?
Not at
all. So much.
Okay. They are definitely not encouraged. But his grandfather, Jan, who helped build Unicomp back in the days before everyone only had four names, he encourages Chip one of the earliest things that happens in the book is Chip goes with his grandfather to actually see Unicomp. And his grandfather is saying things like, oh, isn't it great that we all think the same thing and that this computer decides everything for us? And Chip gets the sense that his grandfather is being sarcastic. And it makes him very uncomfortable because in this world, all anyone knows is that Uni is good. He keeps us from fucking up. It's perfect, this perfect day.
But in some cases, it seems to keep people from fucking.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You get to fuck on Saturday nights once you turn 16.
And that's it? Wait,
just Saturdays. Once you turn 16, Saturday night fucking. Saturday night's fuck night.
Bring three buckets.
Yeah.
I'm sure 16-year-old Danger would have appreciated that one minor concession.
Absolutely. So he gets...
It's 21.
Really?
Yeah.
I was 13.
It was my 21st birthday.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good job.
Happy birthday.
Happy 21st to you.
Yeah, that was a good
I
day.
Puked on a girl I wanted to have sex with on my 21st birthday.
Did you?
Very different circumstances.
13? Adam Todd Brown? You got moves.
You know.
Holy Toledo.
I had very bad parents who didn't supervise me well.
They listening to this podcast?
Of course not.
It's probably for the
one of them's listening from heaven.
Aww.
Or hell. I don't know.
So
I don't know a lot about my dad. I don't know what his life was like.
Of course not. Then, yeah. Then you never. Of course, one's not, and then of course, then you don't know on the other one.
Well, my mom's still alive. She's definitely not listening to this podcast, though.
Bit crass for her tastes.
Yeah, and she also is old and doesn't understand podcasts.
It's complex, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot. So the plot of this book centrals around Chip, and his grandfather basically starts encouraging him to just think.
Ooh.
Just spend an hour each day, especially as you get closer to your monthly treatments, which your monthly treatment kind of like resets your mind to the point where you're like, oh, yeah, this is great. I love it. Mm-hmm. But as the medicine wears off, which they explain that by saying that the medicines that they use in a high enough dose will kill people. So they can't just keep everyone drugged constantly. They have to do it monthly. And as it wears off, this spending an hour a day thinking really starts to set in and become a thing Chip likes to do. And from there, once he starts thinking independently of Uni, the rebellion starts.
Oh, shit. Awesome. Okay.
And it's a really interesting, it gets really interesting from there. I don't want to give too much away about the rebellion and how that all works and what role Uni plays even in that, like kind of in orchestrating the rebellion.
Okay.
We just got to the further serve its
the table
purposes.
Of contents is four things. Part one, growing up. Part two, coming alive. Part three, getting away. Part four, fighting back.
Yeah.
That all right. I mean,
if you liked 1984 but were
did not, but go on.
Disappointed with the ending, read This Perfect Day.
Okay.
Because This Perfect Day delivers. It would make a fantastic action movie. I don't know why it hasn't been made into a movie. It would make a genuinely interesting
movies about rebellion film. Are not popular.
Yeah, especially teen rebellion against like a central controlling force.
Yeah, there's been no successful.
Yeah, hopefully that wave will come back.
Like Star Wars, isn't it? It's not like a small rebellious faction against an oppressive overlord.
No. Yeah, so hopefully this book's time will come and it will be made into a movie someday.
You know what? Maybe we become powerful enough media moguls.
We make it via, happen.
Then we make This Perfect Day, and then I'll essay the role of Unicomp.
Yes.
Just sitting in a box going like, no, you can't do that. Stop it.
Yeah.
And that'll be, and then maybe I'll have a fun accent like, hello.
Hello.
11001, I am.
Uni, can I go to Africa then?
No, you can't. You gotta stay here and give a lap dance.
Oi. I love you, Uni.
Fuck it, better. Now go get me some more cup of wiring.
We're going to do the whole episode about this book in those voices.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, so This Perfect Day, and I think This Perfect Day will be the subject of the next episode.
So read it in a hurry is what you're telling me.
Well, that's the thing. You'll be able to read it in a hurry.
All right.
Like, we'll do this again 1 month from now. Hopefully you will have powered through This Perfect Day, and then... if you can, try to power through it in a couple weeks, because Danger's pick is much longer, but it seems so interesting. I can't wait to read it. Tell people about it.
All right. My favorite book of all time is the only book by this author. Actually, well, she's got a collection of short stories. It's called Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. by Susanna Clarke. It is... they made it into a TV series kind of recently. She wrote it into... She finished it, rather, in 2004. I bought it because on the back of the book, it had a nice thing. Neil Gaiman says a nice thing about it.
Right.
And I love Neil Gaiman so much that I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy this incredibly expensive book because if Neil Gaiman says it's the best thing to happen, I'll just read what you... Neil Gaiman, author of the Sandman series and American Gods. Unquestionably, the finest English novel of the fantastic written in the past 70 years. It's funny, moving, scary, otherworldly. I'm sorry. Practical and magical. A journey through light and shadow. From beginning to end. A perfect pleasure.
Can I read this book, Yoni?
Yes.
Yay. I don't know how they say yes in England.
I. But they say everything is a question then.
I?
Right.
Perfect.
Okay, so yeah. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. It is an incredibly large book. This particular edition, let's go back to the back. It is 700-ish pages long.
Right.
And, man, I just, I did, it's my favorite thing that's ever been made. And I, you know, I love music and movies, and we've all got stuff that we care about. Hamilton, I've been going mad with love for Hamilton.
Right.
But at the center of it is this book, which is to me the best fantasy novel ever made. It imagines a world in the early 1800s in which England no longer practices their rich tradition of magic. Magic has fallen off. It's fallen out of fashion. And there's some societies here and there that that are theoretical magicians, which is they study the magic that happened long ago, but they dare not bring it into present day because it's unseemly. Magic is done by low persons with yellow curtains out next to the River Thames. So it's got these low connections, and they don't want to deal with it. And then eventually they discover. In the end of the first chapter of the book, they discover a gentleman magician who is a practical magician, and it introduces this entire world in which, I mean, not just the setting of the book is fantastic in that it richly imagines 1806 England with all of its silly social, you know, it's basically a Jane Austen novel plus magical realism. So there's all these rules that everybody has to obey, and everybody's very polite to each other, and they go to these society. It's a social critique. At the same time, it's that the theme of the book becomes a pursuit between Mr. Norrell, who's a very conservative. He wants to build up practical modern magic.
Right.
In the way that, like, gentlemen can practice. No ladies, of course, but just gentlemen.
Of course.
And Jonathan Strange, who's his young pupil, who's discovered to be a self-taught practical magician gentleman also, of course, who becomes obsessed trying to track down the legacy of the great medieval Raven King, a magician king from the 1400s. Very shadowy, and his presence is felt all throughout England. But the Magician King was both like noble and like brutal at the same time. You know, he's a medieval king, so he's associated with this really these very brutal connotations, and like going into nature and being in nature for a year and then coming back with like, you know, wild fairies and such, and like his servants were fairies, and it's this really wonderful meditation on otherness as well, because like one of the principal characters in the book is Stephen Black. And Stephen Black is a black man who's the servant of one of the ministers in England at the time. And I don't want to get too far into it, but he becomes a bystander to all of English magic. And he talks to a fairy about the Englishman in this really natural way.
Right.
Because this fairy takes this, he's one of the more interesting... There's so much to this book, I can go on and on. But one of the more interesting ideas in the book is there is a faculty of magic and a faculty of reason that exists in everyone with a mind. In men, in humans, The faculty of reason is very strong, but the faculty of magic is very weak. And in the fairy race, who are this parallel race, who live, you know, beneath the earth, on the other side of the rain, they have a very strong faculty of magic, and they can, you know, talk to trees, and they can talk to foxes, and they can move mountains, all this kind of thing. But they are barely sane. So the fairy takes this interest in Stephen Black and wants to see him risen up to become a great king himself, and indeed the king of England,
right?
Because he's so handsome and reasonable, and his proclamations are so very striking. But in the whole time that he's just saying, "I'm just a servant," you know, I don't want to be king. Like it's I. But over time, like they start having these conversations about the English in this really natural way that they can be others.
Right.
They can be other too. And so much of the action takes place on like through these gentlemen and like the people who are in the highest levels of society. But also the people who really bring some of these situations to the head are women and minorities and blacks and like people who have been pressed to the sidelines, the servants.
Right.
Are really the principal driving force throughout. So it's I really can't sum it up any better than how Neil Gaiman does on the back, and indeed the thing that brought me into this. But it's magical realism, it's Jane Austen, it's funny, it's the characters you get to know,
right,
in this really rich way. Like I feel like there are parts of Childermas, who is Mr. Norrell's servant, who's the best character in the book. He has this thing about he always smiles and he never laughs. Like he thinks the whole world is ridiculous, but he doesn't pity anything.
Right.
You know, he's great. He's really, really great. So I mean, like, yeah, you get to know these people, you get to know their histories. You get to know their passions, their pursuit. Eventually, like, there's the Napoleonic War plays an enormous part in the rise of magic. But then things get too wild and too untamed. And is this really what we want out of modern magic? So it's, yeah. And they made a TV show. And the TV show had some very good elements to it.
Right.
And that it ended so poorly, I was astonished.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, you get these images in your head. Like, I didn't want to watch the show for the first 2 years. I think it was put out in 2014 or 15 or so.
Yeah.
Relatively recently. But I didn't want to watch it because I've had images of these people in my head for over a decade.
Right.
And I didn't want to hear how, you know, the fairy, the gentleman with the thistle down hair, as he's referred to in the book. I didn't necessarily want to hear his voice because I already knew how he sounded. Or I didn't want to see Jonathan Strange's face because I already kind of knew how he looked. And some of that stuff they did marvelously. There are some characters that they really put to a head. But, I mean, it's an enormous book. Twice the length of This Perfect
Twice
Day.
Twice the length.
Sorry. And they had to condense it down to, in the British style, only 7 episodes.
Right.
And to do that, they jettisoned so much, and they changed a lot of their relationships. And then they end, like, the last episode is just like, that's how you're ending it. All right.
That's a bummer.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff I liked about the show. I really like how they portrayed Jonathan Strange. I really like how they portrayed Mr. Norrell. I really like how they portrayed Childermas. But outside of that, I had a lot of missed opportunity. So I mean, don't watch the show until you've read the book, and then after you watch, if you do watch the show, read the book again.
Yeah,
I have read this book once a year every year since it came out in 2004, and it's.
It sounds like, yeah, I'm excited to read it.
It's so good. It's very, very good.
So those are our books. This Perfect Day. We're going to do This Perfect Day next because you will stand a much better chance of getting through This Perfect Day.
Yeah. And also
in 1 month.
It's not like you need to listen to these episodes immediately. Like they'll be there for whenever you're ready to read the book and get through it.
Right. Right.
So yeah, longer attention spans, people.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
This Perfect Day is what we'll be talking about 1 month from now. And then the month following that, Jonathan Strange and Is it Mr. Norrell?
Mr. Norrell.
Mr. Norrell.
Yep.
That will be what we'll talk about.
Ira Levin's This Perfect Day.
2 months Susanna from Clark's, today.
Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
It's going to be good. So read those books. We'll come back in a month. I'll find out what Danger thought of This Perfect Day. I hope he likes it. If not, me and Danger will be fighting next.
Yep. For charity.
No. For blood.
For honor?
For blood.
No, for just blood.
I will fight you. Yeah, for honor. I will fight you. I will defend Ira Levin's honor with physical violence.
I think he's honor. He's got Rosemary's Baby's money. I mean,
yeah,
he's good.
Yeah.
Well, and not the baby's money, but whatever. You get it.
We get what you mean.
Yeah, okay, good.
He also wrote The Stepford Wives.
What?
Yeah. He's written some shit.
He has written some shit.
Sliver? Remember the...
Slither?
Sliver.
Sliver. I have not read Sliver, nor heard of it.
Made into a shitty Sharon Stone movie. I'm pretty sure he wrote Sliver.
Okay, yeah, I don't know. I know Slither, which is a movie that stars Malcolm Reynolds from Firefly.
Not the same thing.
I didn't actually watch the movie, though.
So yeah, read This Perfect Day next, and then read Jonathan Strange, Mr. Norrell. Me and Danger are going to come back and talk about him on Get Lit!
Yeah!
Get Lit.
Get Lit.
What a great title.
Yes.
All right. So, yeah, we're going to keep this one short. Neither of us have eaten. We have to go to Lemonade.
Right.
I'm going to throw down on some red miso short ribs.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Yeah. Really good. With the mashed potatoes. Oh.
We should also do a restaurant review show.
Bury me in those. Yeah, we should. All right. Let's get the fuck out of here. Do we have anything to plug? This goes up this week, so if there's anything.
Yes. I mean, just in a really... In a really general sense, the ADEM elections is coming up on January 7th and 8th. Everybody go register as a Democrat, stay registered as a Democrat, and then help us fix the Democratic Party by electing the most progressive people to this governing board of the Democratic Party, the ADEM elections. It's a caucus. You have to actually go to it. Everybody's caucus location is different. It's based on your assembly district. Please go and participate. It's great. Also, call your senators. Tell them that all of Trump's picks, one by one, are full of shit in their own way for a cabinet. Yeah, there's so much you can do, people. Just keep doing it.
And just as importantly, follow me on all the social media outlets on Twitter at Adam Todd Brown. Also on Instagram at Adam Todd Brown.
Hey.
And follow the podcast. And also, you know, check out the website for free episodes because you're probably listening to that. We're going to put this first episode up for free so everyone in the world knows it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But we put up way more free episodes at our website, unpops.com.
We're going to be tastemakers with this shit.
We are.
We are going to be kingmakers.
We're going to be the next Oprah.
Yes, I did. I was thinking about that, and you're right. I don't see this going any other way.
Yeah, I don't see how this ends without us being on the cover of our version of O Magazine.
Lit Magazine?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Lit.
I don't even smoke weed.
You smoke lit.
Yeah! Also, Countless Thousands, Fall Countless Thousands were really good. Our new EP's out. And,
yeah.
And we made slot number 5 on Adam Todd Brown's albums of the year this
year.
You
did.
And it made me so happy.
You beat some big names. Well, not big names. Like indie rock names.
Yeah. You know what? Any name is bigger than ours because we're very small. We're very teeny tiny. But it means a lot that you liked it so much.
It was a good EP. And we got a lot of feedback about it. People like it.
It's good. Yeah. The one feedback we've only ever gotten is, you guys aren't punk. This isn't punk enough. Which is hilarious because one of the songs on our CD is about how you don't get to decide what's punk.
Right.
Yeah. We just the one bad review we've gotten so far this CD has been, this isn't punk. It's not punk.
Like what is punk anymore? That's like my number one pick was a punk band, but you wouldn't listen to most of their songs and go, oh, yeah, that's a punk band.
Yeah. You know what? I can be influenced by Fugazi and Against Me and sound like I do.
Yeah. You sure can.
Darn it.
All right. Let's go eat some goddamn food.
Sweet. I'm looking forward to it.
Be good times.
Books. Right. Get lit.
Get lit. Read some books. All right. Say goodbye, Danger.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you.